This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The website BeliefNet has been following the elections with reporting and analysis of how religion has been figuring into the presidential and vice presidential campaigns. The website is also asking for readers' opinions of Bill Maher's film Religious. My guest, Stephen Waldman, is the founder and editor-in-chief of BeliefNet. It's the largest website devoted to religion and spirituality. It's not affiliated with any specific religion. Waldman is also the author of the book Founding Faith, about some of the myths surrounding the role of religion in the founding of America. He says the founding faith wasn't Christianity, and it wasn't secularism, it was religious liberty. Stephen Waldman, welcome back to Fresh Air. Let's start first with your opinion of a religious. I know you saw it. What did you think?
Well, I thought it was funnier than I was expecting and more challenging, but also as expected, highly offensive and quite slippery in its own way.
What do you mean by offensive and slippery?
Well, throughout a lot of the movie, he says that all he is trying to do is make the case for doubt, for people having doubt and being free to have doubt. But by the end of the movie, it's very clear that he does not have doubt. He has great certainty about his beliefs against religion. And he doesn't see the contradiction there. He also, most of the movie is an attack on fundamentalism, and he really doesn't deal very well with moderate religion or religion that isn't, take scripture literally.
What would you say to him to make a case for religion?
Well, first of all, for every example he gives of religion harming society, there's at least one or many more of religion helping society, whether it's, the role that faith played in the civil rights movement on a social level, or whether it's the way that faith drives millions, if not billions, of people towards leading good lives or getting through crisis and trauma. There's just literally, billions of examples of faith helping people on a personal level and helping the world on a global level. I'm not arguing that faith doesn't also do harm, as he suggested, but to only look at one part of the story is not really a documentary, as he calls it.
One of the things that you and others have been writing about on BeliefNet is how religion is figuring into the presidential campaign. So I'd like to talk with you about that, if you will. You've written that you have friends who are secular and friends who are very religious. And you've been trying to figure out what you find scary and not scary about how religion is being used in the campaign to reassure your secular friends that certain things aren't scary and to warn others that certain things kind of are scary about how religion and politics are meeting. So I'm going to first ask you to choose one of the statements that you've chosen to reassure your secular friends that it doesn't sound as bad, that the statement isn't as bad as they think it is.
Well, this particularly came up in the context of Sarah Palin and the swirl of information of people learning about what she believes and what she practices, and it's absolutely terrifying to a lot of people. The first example that came up, and it was used by Charlie Gibson in his first interview with Sarah Palin, was a comment that she made essentially talking about God's plan for the Iraq War. And many people became enraged and frightened by the statement because it sounded to some like she was saying the Iraq War was God's plan, which would be understandably of concern.
Let me just quote what she said because I have the quote here.
Good.
She said that she asked the members of the church to pray, quote, that our leaders, our national leaders, are sending U.S. soldiers out on a task that is from God. That's what we have to make sure that we're praying for, that there is a plan and that that plan is God's plan.
Right. So she's saying we need to pray that it is God's plan. In other words, it may be God's plan, it may not be God's plan. We should pray that it sure is. That strikes me as being perfectly within the normal, legitimate bounds of a politician and a Christian politician talking about faith and politics, that we all want to be taking steps that are in line with God's will and God's values. in that case, it did not seem to me that she was justifying the war as being God's plan. The way, and that was the way it was interpreted by Charlie Gibson and many other people.
But if you're if you are secular, doesn't it sound kind of scary that somebody would think that going to war or not going to war is God's plan? That God has a specific plan and it's the job of the politicians to follow it?
Well, I think if you're secular, you are frightened by that. And this is one of those areas where...
Well, even if you're just of a different religion, or even if you're of that religion and don't take things as literally as that.
It doesn't bother me if someone is trying to figure out what is the right thing to do according to God's plan or what God would want. You know, there is a long tradition of this among our founding fathers, especially... trying to do what they thought was right and trying to justify it as being part of God's plan. The slippery slope is when politicians claim to know what God's plan is and claim to try to figure out the policy to match it up with God's plan. That's where it gets very troublesome because, first of all, where does that politician come off claiming that they have a direct pipeline to God's voice when other politicians or other voters don't? That's where it really gets dangerous. The mere fact of someone trying to craft a policy that they think is, you know, in sync with what their religion or their God would want seems fine. That's absolutely what, you know, Martin Luther King did when he was promoting the civil rights movement. It's absolutely what George Washington was doing when he was fighting the American Revolution. Now, there's a second Sarah Palin quote where she does go into what I view as a dangerous area.
And what's that?
That's the one where she says that it is God's will that they build a particular natural gas pipeline. And that quote to me was very different because in that case, she was saying, or did appear to be saying, that it is God's will that this pipeline be built. That's problematic for all sorts of reasons. First of all, how does she know that it's God's plan that this pipeline gets built? What does that do and what kind of position does that put the opposition in? That means if you oppose the pipeline, you're against God. You're against God's will. That's exactly the kind of religion and politics mixing that the founding fathers were terrified of, and with good cause.
She signed a bill in Alaska while she was governor, creating a Christian Heritage Week. What do you think of that?
That made me uncomfortable for a couple reasons. First, it was a string of founding fathers' quotes proving what good Christians they were, and I just happened to write a whole book about how founding fathers' quotes have been routinely taken out of context, and there she was doing it as the governor of Alaska, ripping the founding fathers out of context and portraying them as devout Christians when not all of them were. More importantly, if the state of Alaska has a week called Christian Heritage Week, and they don't also have Jewish Heritage Week and Muslim Heritage Week and Secular Heritage Week, then they are putting the official stamp of approval of Alaska that they are preferring one religion over another. That's a big no-no. What the Supreme Court has said and what many philosophers believe is that it is okay for government or government officials to stick their toe in the water of promoting religion in general as long as they do it equally for all religions, as long as they are very pluralistic about it. Once the government gets in the business of favoring a particular religion, that really does go against the spirit or the letter of the Constitution.
Bill Maher made it clear that he's very disturbed by the idea of somebody who has political power believing that the end of days is imminent. Because if there's the possibility of the end of the world, they're going to see that as a good thing, as a chance to get reunited with Jesus, as opposed to a bad thing that needs to be avoided. I'm wondering what your take is as the founder of BeliefNet about, well, in particular, Sarah Palin. I know the church that she used to attend to, the Wasilla Assembly of God, has it on their list of the basic beliefs of the church that the rapture is imminent, the end of days is imminent.
I think it's a fair question to ask Sarah Palin, but it's also important that we keep in mind that many people who believe in end times or even say that it's imminent don't necessarily mean it's tomorrow or in their lifetime. And secondly, even those who do think it might be in their lifetime are not changing anything about their lives. They're not doing anything differently as a result. Now, I think it is a legitimate question because some people are doing things differently. And if a public official is going to be influenced by that view, if for instance, it makes them not want to have peace in the Middle East because war in the Middle East will actually be what brings Jesus's return, well, that is an important thing to know. But it is important to know that many, many people who believe in end times don't change their lives or their behavior at all.
One of the videos being widely circulated on the internet now is of a minister from Kenya named Thomas Muthi, who was at Sarah Palin's church. This is, I guess, at her former church. This is a few right. years ago. And he had a reputation in his village of having chased out a witch, someone who he believed was practicing witchcraft. So when he was praying over Sarah Palin, one of the things he prayed for was to protect her from the spirit of witchcraft. Where does that register on your meter?
It doesn't bother me that much. It would bother me a lot more if she piped up and said, yes, I agree. I've got a lot of witches in my life that I would like to get rid of and started naming names. That would be very troublesome. But, you know, in my line of work as editor of BeliefNet, I'll often be in situations where people will want to pray over me or for me. And a lot of times it comes from a direction that is you know, certainly not where I came from. But I tend to view it as a gift and as someone trying to do well by me. So it didn't bother me that someone was praying over her that way because it really left unanswered the question of what did she think of this?
Is that a question you'd like to ask her?
Yes, that would definitely be a question I would like to ask her. I have about 75 questions related to religion that I would like to ask Sarah Palin. That's not even in the top 10, but I absolutely would love to know what she was thinking when he was talking about casting out witches. Was she thinking, oh, I hope this gets over quickly and there's no one filming this for YouTube? Or was she thinking, yes, good, I'm glad he's saying that because I've got a lot of witches in my life I'd like to get rid of.
You know, it seems that John McCain chose Sarah Palin in part because she is an evangelical Christian and she could rally the base. And so many Americans have questions that they want to know about her faith. She's been doing remarkably little with the press, but the couple of interviews that she's given, I don't think she's been asked directly about her religion, not the questions that you would like to hear asked. How appropriate do you think it would be for a journalist to just ask point blank the kind of questions you've been asking?
I think it's completely appropriate. And these types of questions have been asked of Barack Obama and John McCain and Joe Biden. And they ought to be asked of Sarah Palin as well. The problem is, of course, that there's a lot of different types of questions that need to be asked of Sarah Palin. And so these religion questions need to sort of get in line. But I do think it's one of the key outstanding questions about her is how does her faith affect the way she would govern? It's obviously an issue of great concern to some voters.
It seems that religion has backfired a little bit during this presidential campaign. For example, Barack Obama had to distance himself from Jeremiah Wright, his former pastor. He even had to leave his church. In part, he said, because it was causing so much, the controversy was causing so much distraction and ruckus in the church. John McCain, after getting his endorsement from John Hagee, ended up having to disavow the endorsement because of Hagee's controversial views about the end times and homosexuals and Hurricane Katrina. And Sarah Palin appears to have been chosen in part because of her religious views and their ability to rally the evangelical base. But at the same time, you could argue that her religious views have alienated a lot of voters, and it's unclear how that will play out on Election Day. I wonder what your thoughts are about how religion has at times backfired this time around or made things problematic.
Well, we're certainly seeing that if you insert religion into a campaign, it's not a guaranteed positive thing. For every effort to promote your religion as a way of getting votes, you run the risk of it backfiring and leading to some controversy. Sarah Palin's a great example of that. I mean, she absolutely energized religious conservatives in the Republican Party, which was no small feat because they really didn't like McCain very much, and yet overnight, it made them enthusiastic about the McCain-Palin ticket. That's quite a neat trick politically. On the other hand, obviously, she comes with certain baggage, and we will see on Election Day whether she ended up being a net plus or a net minus. Barack Obama has talked more about his personal faith than John McCain and Sarah Palin combined, and I think it's mostly been an electoral positive. But as you noted, he's also got hammered for his connections to his past church and is still trying to disabuse people of the notion that he's Muslim. So we're seeing in very, very rich detail that when you encourage or invite religion to be part of a political campaign, you can't be sure that it's going to have a nice, noble cleansing effect on the political system. You can't be sure that it's only going to help you. It clearly cuts both ways. And by the way, this is not the first time this has happened. You know, in the 1800 election between John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, Jefferson accused Adams of shoving religion down America's throats, that he was going to create an official state religion, which was a bit of an exaggeration, but it showed that religion is being used fairly and unfairly in presidential elections going all the way back to the beginning. And I suppose that should make us feel a little bit better that however bad it gets, we'll survive.
John McCain has made reference to America being a Christian nation. I've seen you refer to this. So can you tell us what the context was and what specifically he said about America as a Christian nation?
He was asked whether he thought the Constitution decreed America to be a Christian nation, and he said yes, the Constitution defines America as a Christian nation, which is way out there. I mean, that's just untrue. There's lots of different ways of fudging and finessing that question. Lots of people say America is a Christian nation, and that means, you know, it's majority Christian or it was infused with Judeo-Christian values. There's ways of phrasing that where you can fudge and be, you know, sort of subject to interpretation. But he went farther than that and actually said the Constitution created a Christian nation, which is not true. I actually viewed it as a sign that McCain, when he tries to pander to religious conservatives, he usually messes it up. He's just not that good at it. You know, most religious conservative politicians, when they answer that same question, come up with that wording that implies that it's sort of a Christian nation, Christianity had a higher place in it, but it also allows for other religions. There's many different ways of fudging that, but he didn't quite know what they were.
Now, Joe Biden is a Catholic, which is still a minority religion as far as the White House goes. Has the Catholic Church threatened to withhold communion from him because he supports a woman's right to choose to have an abortion, although he opposes federal funding for abortion?
Well, the whole Catholic Church hasn't gone that far, but individual bishops have suggested that he might not want to present himself for communion. This is a problem for all pro-choice Catholic politicians. And ironically, right now, Barack Obama is doing better among Catholics than John Kerry, who was Catholic, done with Catholics. And it sure would be a supreme irony if it turns out that Barack Obama is able to do better among Catholics because he's not Catholic. Because he's not Catholic, he doesn't have to deal with this issue of whether or not he's a bad Catholic for being pro-choice. The other really interesting test that Biden's candidacy provides is what kind of a Catholic can actually draw Catholic votes. In other words, Joe Biden is not a theological Catholic in terms of being 100% in sync with the teachings of the church. On the other hand, he is very much a cultural Catholic. He went to Catholic boys' school. He went to a Catholic high school. He had a rosary under his pillow when he was getting brain surgery for his aneurysm. And he came from a kind of working-class Catholic background. If anyone can make the case that he was a cultural Catholic, Joe Biden can. He's trying to appeal to Catholics in a really interesting way. He doesn't go around quoting scripture or talking at great length about his Catholic upbringing, but he uses words and phrases that are very evocative of Catholic social teaching. So when he talks about economics and employment, he doesn't just say we need more jobs. He says we need to fight for the dignity of work. The dignity of work is a phrase that is a critical part of Catholic social teaching. So he will try to cast classic Democratic Party economic talking points as being part of Catholic social teaching. And then he'll also just drop, you know, anecdotes about his experience in Catholic boys' school and things like that. So it's a kind of subtle use of Catholic language and his own biographical material more than it is a, you know, quoting the Pope or a particular encyclical.
Have you been following what's happening in the Jewish vote, if we can generalize that way?
Yes. For a while, it was really looking like John McCain was going to do better among Jews than a Republican had done in a long time. And that's because there are a lot of Jews who have problems with Barack Obama, and I think there's a real racial element to that. Now, Sarah Palin's selection as John McCain's running mate may reverse that pattern, because while Palin is thrilling evangelical Christians, she's scaring a lot of American Jews. So it may well be, in particular, that Florida, a critical state in this election, has moved closer to the Obama side as a result of the Palin selection.
Well, you know, because McCain is so close to Joe Lieberman, who is an Orthodox Jew, I think that was probably having an impact on many Jewish voters. But why do you think Sarah Palin is, as you put it, scaring Jewish voters, some Jewish voters?
Well, Sarah Palin, you know, among other things, signed a law calling for Christian Heritage Week in Alaska and things like that, you know, make Jews fearful that she's a Christian extremist who's going to shove, you know, Christianity down their throats. And that creates a lot of worries for particularly older Jews, of which there are many in Florida.
Before we wrap up, let me just ask you if you have any other impressions that you'd like to share with us about how religion is playing out in this presidential campaign.
The economic crisis has meant that even among the most observant religious people in America, moral values issues are secondary this year to the economy. That's a hugely important factor as we head toward the election. That's very different from last time around. Another big factor that hasn't been much discussed is the massive shift of Hispanics towards the Democratic Party. And it turns out that that shift is mostly coming from Protestant Hispanics. And these are Protestant Hispanics who are Pentecostal or evangelical and really like George Bush's faith. And they've now abandoned the Republican Party and shifted to the Democrats in large measure. And that hasn't been discussed very much, but that may end up being one of the most important religious developments of the entire election.
Stephen Waldman, thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Stephen Waldman is the founder and editor-in-chief of BeliefNet.com and the author of the book Founding Faith, Providence, Politics, and the Birth of Religious Freedom in America. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org.